Next up, we have Elisa Belusa. She is speaking on Utah's 72-hour waiting period before abortion. Elise is a research manager for the Evaluation of Abortion Restrictions Project at Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health, otherwise known as ANSWER, at the University of California, San Francisco. She has a master's in science from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Her studies and work have focused on reproductive and sexual health research in Kenya, Senegal, Indonesia, and throughout the U.S. And currently, her work focuses primarily on abortion regulation. So, Elise, come on up. And if folks want to sit down, there are some seats up front.
Good morning. So, first, I want to apologize because if I'm hopping around up here, I drank too much water already and now don't have time to go to the bathroom. So, if I run out after questions, don't be offended. But good morning. As Amanda said, my name is Elise Belusa, and I work at Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health at the University of California, San Francisco. Thank you for joining me this morning. I'm going to talk about our work evaluating Utah's 72-hour waiting period and two-visit requirements. I'm going to focus today, though, on women's perceptions versus their experiences with that waiting period, not on the main results of this study. First, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors. No relationships to disclose. So, today's work is part of the Evaluation of Abortion Restrictions Project at ANSWER at UCSF. Our mission is to conduct rigorous research on complex and controversial topics related to reproduction. And the Evaluation of Abortion Restrictions Project is a five-year project to study the impact of state-level abortion restrictions on women. The project allows us to conduct 1 to 2 new studies a year where abortion restrictions are rapidly passing through legislatures. We currently have studies in Georgia, Louisiana, Ohio, Utah, and Wisconsin. So why study abortion restrictions? Probably don't have to ask this question in this room, but I'm going to answer it. As you all know, there's a growing popularity for these laws in state legislatures, but there's little or no evidence of their effect. And we really know little about women's experiences with these restrictions, so we've developed a series of studies to try to address this gap. And our project aims to identify the effects of these laws under the belief that policy and law should be evidence-based. And as I mentioned today, I'm going to focus on Utah and our 72-hour waiting period evaluation. I'm going to focus particularly on three aspects of the law, the 72-hour waiting period itself, the two-visit requirement, which is part of the law, and third, the state-mandated information that's given to women at that first visit. In May 2012, this law went into effect. It was the first of its kind to be implemented. However, there are similar laws now in South Dakota and Missouri. The law in Utah requires women to attend two visits, the first being the abortion information visit, where women receive state-mandated information about abortion, but they don't receive ultrasound or medical care at that visit. At that visit, she will schedule her abortion procedure, which must occur at least 72 hours after that first visit, and that's business days, not including weekends. The main goal of this study was to assess the effects of the three aspects of the law that I mentioned, but again, today's presentation is going to focus on other key findings. And the findings associated with this study, the larger study, will be published next year, so you can look out for those. In the data from Utah, we noticed the difference in women's perceptions of the 72-hour waiting period versus their experience with the waiting period. And then we developed the following research questions. First, we will look at the factors associated with women's views of the three aspects of the law. Secondly, we'll describe women's views of the law and compare that to women's experiences with the law. Both of those were using open-ended responses. And although this wasn't the original purpose of the study, when we reviewed the data and with further analysis, we noticed these distinctions and thought we could add to previous research that has been done. So looking at the existing literature on regulation compared to experiences, really there's very little that exists in general, but even less evidence exists looking at women's views of abortion regulation versus their experiences with those regulations. What does exist, however, are mostly qualitative samples. One of the studies from the Midwest that we found recruited women at their abortion visit, and when these women were asked about abortion regulations, they felt other women could benefit from mandated information and waiting periods. Most women in the study expressed that while the waiting period was unnecessary for themselves, it would assist other women with their decision making. And in a similar analysis of that same population, women were asked about their experience being offered to view the ultrasound, which was required at that time. And women's experiences were usually mixed, but when these women were asked whether this regulation should be required, women felt that it was a good thing to be offered to view the ultrasound, although it shouldn't be required to view the ultrasound. So in Utah again, the abortion information visit occurs first, and this is where we recruited 500 women to complete an iPad survey on their knowledge of abortion. After at least 72 hours, women can receive their abortion, and 3 weeks later we followed up with 309 women, interviewing them on the phone. We asked them questions about their knowledge, views, and experiences with the waiting period. And for this study, we worked with 4 facilities in Utah, and for the iPad questions, and the follow-up survey, we used both closed and open-ended questions. So for a little sample description and background, the women in our study were predominantly white, though nearly a quarter were Hispanic or Latina, and the mean age was 25. 19% of the sample identified as Mormon, and more than half reported no religious beliefs at all. Most women reported having had an abortion at the follow-up interview, 86%, and of those who had not had an abortion at follow-up, some had had a miscarriage or discovered that they hadn't been pregnant. Some were still trying to have an abortion, and others were no longer seeking abortion. Again, this isn't the main purpose of my presentation today, but if you have questions about these results, I'm happy to put you in touch with Dr. Sarah Roberts, who's the PI on this project. Our participation rate in the study was 73%, with 62% completing follow-up. So we included a measure of abortion myth endorsement in our study. This scale is based on the extent to which women endorsed 5 abortion myths. The scale ranges from 0 to 1, and higher scores indicating more rejection of myths. The 5 myths that we examined were: abortion causes depression or anxiety, abortion causes breast cancer, most women experience regret after abortion, abortion causes infertility, and childbirth is safer than abortion. Our hypothesis for this analysis included an association between endorsing abortion myths and having more favorable views of the waiting period and the mandated information provided at the abortion information visit. We also believed that women with a history of depression or anxiety would have more negative views of the waiting period, and those with lower socioeconomic status would have more negative views of the 2-visit requirement. We created 3 separate scales based on questions about each component of the law. Each had a reasonable internal consistency rate, or alpha, and higher scores here indicate more negative views of the law. So what we found was that endorsing more abortion myths is associated with a positive view of the waiting period and with a positive view of the mandated information, but not associated with views of the 2-visit requirement. Or looking at that in the opposite way, rejecting abortion myths is associated with a negative view of the waiting period and the mandated information. But neither history of depression or anxiety nor socioeconomic status, here shown as food or housing insecurity, but also measured as public assistance, were associated with views of the different aspects of the law. So then we asked women to tell us about their views of the waiting period in their own words and the 2-visit requirement. And we asked women 2 questions. First, about the waiting period, we asked, why do you think the state of Utah requires women to wait 72 hours? And then we asked them about the 2-visit requirement, why do you think the state of Utah requires women to have 2 visits? Their responses are shown here. as they were coded. And this slide's really important because it shows our first step, which was from those responses, we coded them as positive, negative, neutral, or mixed. And although nearly half the sample expressed positive views of both the waiting period and the two-visit requirement, the breakdown of these in terms of negative and neutral is very different between the two, as you can see. A larger proportion felt negatively about the waiting period, which is considerably more than the two-visit requirement, which we thought was very interesting. And the reasons for these views really varied. Many women described their views towards the law as beneficial for other women, but kept themselves out of those that would benefit from a law like this. Women described other women as them, they, those other women. And one woman described the 72-hour waiting period as positive because it allows them, or women, to make the right decision, to be responsible and think. And another described the two visits being useful for women so that they do not use abortion as birth control. Some women did view the law negatively, however, believing it made women feel bad about their decision and was designed to have women change their minds. One woman explains that despite abortion being legal, the state of Utah wants you to know you're doing something wrong. In regards to the two visits, many women viewed this requirement negatively, feeling that it's useless and does not change the minds of women who are sure of their decision. When we coded in more detail, however, we found these top views. So these codes are not mutually exclusive. Responses could fall into more than one category. But many women gave the same reasons for their views for both the waiting period and the two visits. Many of the views expressed here were related to the belief that the state was trying to help women, particularly with their decision. Others expressed disparaging views about the laws, including the high religiosity of the state of Utah and the belief that Utah is trying to limit the number of abortions. So then we asked women about their own personal experience with the different aspects of the law, where they expressed very different opinions and views. So despite half the respondents expressing positive views of the law, when we did ask them about their own experiences with the law, many expressed how difficult the law was for them. Reasons really included wanting it to be over with and feeling sure of their decision, but still being forced to wait. Many mentioned that they had to wait longer than 72 hours because of scheduling with the clinic and arranging their own lives. They also described the difficulty in knowing they were getting further along in their pregnancy, their fear of becoming attached to the pregnancy, and being uncomfortable with having an abortion by the time that they could be seen for an appointment. And many women were also worried that they'd be beyond the gestational limit of the clinic or be ineligible for a medication abortion. Reasons for the two-visit requirement being difficult were mainly logistical, including getting time off work, having to drive far from their home twice, scheduling the appointment, and finding time in their own lives to go to the clinic. And though women's views were similar in two aspects, they gave concrete reasons for their different and difficult experiences with the law. As you can see by these quotes, these women described the waiting period being difficult because they were sure of their decision, but were still required to wait. One woman describes the two visits and waiting period requirements as difficult because it pushed her further than just 72 hours. And she had trouble making logistical arrangements for the appointments. This was a common fear amongst the respondents, the fear that the waiting period would push them past the gestational limit of either their comfort or the clinic's. So in summary, we found that abortion myths are associated with a positive view of the 72-hour waiting period law in Utah. So if they endorse abortion myths, they're more likely to have a positive view of the law. Women are more negative about the waiting period aspects of the law than the two-visit aspects in their views. And despite their negative experiences with the law, women have more positive views of the 72-hour waiting period law. And our limitations were really that we asked no equivalent questions of experiences with waiting period, but instead we asked respondents to tell us what the hardest part of having to wait and make two separate visits was. And also, we did not collect views of the two aspects for those who didn't end up coming back for the second visit for whatever reason. So in conclusion, we have a robust finding here supported by previous literature. Women believe abortion regulations are helpful for other women, but not themselves. They feel these laws could be useful for others, but not for their specific situation. And what does this mean? Could this be the stigma associated with abortion? The fact that women who endorse abortion myths have more positive views of the law could point to really the powerful role that stigma plays in women's views of abortion in general. What does it mean that policies like the 72-hour waiting period and other abortion regulations are based on non-expert perceptions of what some women believe other women need? And these policies are really relying on public opinion that these laws are beneficial, but this is not evidence that helps women. So I'd like to thank our team. It wouldn't be possible without them. And if you have any questions, you can contact myself or Dr. Roberts. Were at the iPad survey or the follow-up interview? I don't. But yeah.
Are you talking about us giving them like the right after we give them information?
Yeah.
So that did come up at the end of the interview where the women were, said. So by the way, about those questions, like which was the right answer?
Right. Yeah.
And then.
And the way that they're listed here is not how they were asked. They were like, is childbirth safer than abortion in the United States, or is abortion safer than childbirth kind of thing? Like, so it asked both sides, and they could say what they agreed with.
Something I'm thinking about a lot, and how to not perpetuate.
Yeah.
Within the question.
One more quick question?
Sure. Abortion information visit? Yeah. So part of the law is that they have to come for that first visit and they get state-mandated information on abortion. And that's purely an information visit. They're not allowed to have an ultrasound or any real medical care at that visit. And so some women didn't know, maybe they'd taken a pregnancy test, but they couldn't go there and do that visit and get an ultrasound to verify if they were pregnant. So sometimes when they came back, or later on, they realized they weren't actually pregnant.